And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Today, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Unafeared, unafeared in the face of the fearful. All right. Well, you know, we got hold of Karen. We're going to have her on the first hour tomorrow. She had a horse die and childbirth, and it got big, and we heard that maybe we won't talk about it tomorrow. But it was, she lives on, enough acreage. She's got horses, and one of them, and it's had birth before, but the baby's too big, and then she's dealing with that. So she's willing to come on this hour. Take care of that, and we'll do it first hour tomorrow. I pick up Davi midday today, and then he'll be on tomorrow. But I think he'd enjoy it. First hour, we'll do the Karen thing, and that'll get us going. We got Tim Pachote on, and we want to get some headlines with him on what's going on with the truck. I got you, Tim.
You got me. Good morning, everybody.
Okay. All right. I promised. Let me go through these headlines really quick, just because I promised I had a bunch of this stuff up on the site there. All right. One, everybody wants to leave California. All right. Next story. Duh. You know, this is they're talking about regulation, and it's happening. You know, they're having a net loss in population in California. When the hell has that ever happened? Let's see. OPEC's mission is accomplished. It is not for us to declare on behalf of the Vienna Agreement of countries that it is mission accomplished, but if our outlook is accurate, it certainly looks very much like it. You know, the Paris-based energy agency wrote, what they're talking about is because of the economic slowdown, there's a 690,000 barrels per day that they don't see. We don't need as much anymore. Yay. Wow. They claim a win, you know, but that means the economy is starting to go. Promising cancer drug aces human clinical trials. You know, did they finally get a cure for cancer? I don't know. Go check it out on Freedom's Phoenix. If you got cancer, you might want to see that. Trump accuses Russia, China of currency devaluation. Not acceptable. I'm going to save that one. That's a Tim Pachote thing right there. I want to do it. Then there's improved quantum error correction, universal quantum computing. This quantum computing thing is coming a lot faster than I think people realize. I just keep putting that up because, man, that's going to change a lot of stuff. All right, and what we got here? Reader, worried about inflation, deflation, stocks, bonds, gold, everything? Worried about everything? Yeah, I am. And they're talking about inflation. My friend is better off than most. He has a small retirement nest egg, but he is fearful of 07-09 kind of drawdown. That's a reasonable fear, to say the least. And this is what Tim, I'm going to leave this one up, because Tim's always talking about it's timing. When do you start taking out? When do you start going at your principal? When do you got to start spending it? You're planning on retiring, and you can't. Our friend, Bob Anderson, he's ready to retire. He's told me a few days ago, he goes, I'm out here at the nuclear power plant doing, I'm like, man, I gotta get up early. I don't have to do this. He was planning on maybe retiring this summer. Maybe not. This is exactly what happens. It's kind of, storms unleash tornadoes in U.S. East, record snow in Midwest. The winter that just freaking wouldn't quit. It's snowing. My son-in-law's mother is visiting for a few months. She came out. And just last week, it was snowing, in the east. She's in Massachusetts somewhere. It's just, and now she's got nice weather here, Now we have, let's see, robot rights. Well, what happens when we get first contact? Go see the fifth letter of Captain Mark. Go to pirateswithoutborders.com. We anticipated this. What are you going to do? Well, we'll deal with that. Let's see. They got gene APOE4 causes Alzheimer's disease in humans, and a fix has been created. Wow, we're curing cancer and Alzheimer's. You know, when they've been holding that back. Stock surge as yield curve crumbles to fresh 11-year flat. All right, we'll save that for Tim. You know, what the heck does that mean? You know, we have the yield curve. What's a yield curve? Tim, do you know what a yield curve is?
This has to do with the difference between, like, the short-term borrowing rates and the long-term borrowing rates.
Okay.
But, I mean, zero hedging a lot of times has, you know, pretty attention-grabbing headlines. But, you know, it's been collapsed for a while now, so.
Okay, we'll talk about that. The Zuckerberg hearings prove government shouldn't regulate Facebook. Well, it goes on. This is from FEE, Foundation for Economic Education. But the main thing is that, yeah, they want to be regulated. Oh, regulate me. You regulate me, and I'm already here, and I got all the compliance regulated, and no more competition. This is how this happens. It always happens. See, rare look at Tesla's solar roof in the wild, plus exclusive interview. The first guy that got his whole roof done with power-producing solar panels. It looks like shingles. They're kind of a little bit shiny, but they're just dark shingles. You put them up, and boom, I got my whole roof. It'd make me some power. And then he getting to Model 3, and he had nailed, there goes your energy thing. You want to take care of that billions of barrels of oil a day. Well, this is one way of doing it. We're going to be getting on the solar bandwagon here pretty soon. Expect much more pain. Much more pain. In case you failed to notice, investment sentiment has changed. The stock market struggles to go up on good news. Investors wonder if the Fed still has their back. Well, say, yeah, the, yeah. No. The, all right, now this one, it was the mark of the official start of World War III is the argument that they're making. But the one thing that got my attention was the graphic. And it shows a chessboard and then a little, like, table, a dining table next to it. And it has the king and queen, the white king and queen, and the black king and queen sitting at the table, while the chessboard just has all the other pieces just bloody laying down. Just, you know, that's what happens. War is that, you know, all the pawns and bishops, knights and rooks, and they're dead. While the king and queen are sitting over there going, you know, and they're in the Caymans. You know, they just kind of chilling and whatnot. Oh, we got John Boehner explains why he changed his mind on marijuana. The Republican and former Speaker of the House sat in with host Savannah Guthrie on Friday to discuss why he made the decision to join the advisory board of the legal cannabis company Acreage Holdings earlier this month. Because somebody paid him some money, that's why. International Monetary Fund warns of dark clouds looming as economic optimism ends. You know, it's amazing they were keeping it as long. And this is where we were talking about Trump embracing this economy. What an idiot. I don't know what that. But you know how they're going to deal with it. The GOP commits $250 million to keep control of the House. Is that going to make a difference? I don't know. But they're going to make an effort. And then we got a bunch of Syria stuff and Syria this. And caught in a lie. U.S. and allies bombed Syria the night before international inspectors arrived. Shocking. All right. Now, this is, you know, Trump is going after Amazon and the Washington Post. And he's doing, it's all about, we're subsidizing them with cheap delivery and sales tax. We got to get blah, 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 blah. Yep. You know, Trump versus Bezos. Billionaire v. billionaire. We'll see what happens with that. Let's see. Scientists say the European Union's robot Bill of Rights would violate the rights of humans. Yeah, I'm like, you know, can I own a robot and him go work for me and him not, you know, like, go on strike? I mean, what? You know, this is getting weird. All right. Now, here's one that, you know, Tim sent me, and then we'll get to Tim. He goes, no joke. Judge who forced Cohen to ID Hannity performed Soros' wedding. The judge that, you know, outed Hannity for something. We'll talk to you. This is something Tim sent. That judge that did, you know, he was the guy that performed the ceremony for George Soros when he got married. I'm like, damn, you can't
You can't, you know, oh, and reporting your Bitcoin?
Nobody's reporting.
Crimes of the Crown by Captain Mark. The Crown casts the world in shadow and claims to be our guiding light. Cowards clamor for security from boogeymen and ghost stories. While I say these hobgoblins are imaginary. I say those they propped up as our liberators are now subsisting on our bondage. I say there is freedom in the black, and that's exactly where we intend to go. The Crown banishes its own officers for exposing its crimes and tortures dissidents to the brink of madness. It dominates the globe and swallows the wealth of generations, leaving only blood and excrement. The Crown calls it piracy to explore frontiers beyond its grasp. So the time has come for us to define the conduct among pirates. I say the Crown has trampled our necks long enough. Need decentralized solutions to centralized problems? Looking for a community of like-minded scoundrels? Or just want some swag to let the Crown know what you think of it? Join the conversation at piratswithoutborders.com. We won't be hard to find.
Allergies? You got allergies?
Yeah, a little bit better today, though. You know, I feel a lot better today.
Freckle-faced, red-headed boy, man, I was sensitive to everything. You know, I lived in Florida, and it was everything, something was in bloom all the time. And they thought I had asthma and when I was a kid, and I just, you know, muscled through it because I wanted to go play. But the it was allergies. And when we came out here, I had to get used to, you know, a lot of stuff. But since Donna has been adding bee pollen to my daily, you know, whatever concoction she gives me, you add the bee pollen to it, I haven't had an allergy problem for at least 3-4 years. I mean, it's a most amazing thing. And the deal is that you got to get pollen from local sources because it does whatever it does, you know, the stuff that's in the air and so on. And by doing that, I'm telling you, within 3 days, all of a sudden, you know, if you just take a regular dose of bee pollen as part of your thing, man, it just goes away. It's been, I went in my entire life, 50 whatever years, dealing with this. And every time, because we had those citrus trees out back. And I remember, you know, anybody had citrus trees, I walking up to, you know, their house, or they had them in the front. It was like a blanket come over me. My head would stop. You know, now I don't have to worry. I don't even think about it anymore. So bee pollen, if you, in case you got real problems.
No, yeah, I'll have to check that out. Yeah, I made a mistake of being outside the day that it was super windy out and all the crap is blowing around. So, and then also, I think my immune system was down from doing that, the half Iron Man.
Oh, yeah. Okay. All right, how'd you do?
I finished, but, you know, I really had, I mean, it felt like my shoulder, I mean, going into this, I mean, my rotator cuff, I think it was from the massage that I got on the beach that they impinged something from that massage, because my right shoulder is the one that's been killing me, but I rehabbed that back just in time. And then my left shoulder feels better now that I did the swim. But I figured, you know, let's just see if I can make up some lost time on the bike. And I had nothing really to lose. I've already done that course before, and wasn't racing anybody, so I decided to go faster than when I was actually in shape, and that ended up being a bad idea for the run.
Oh yeah, the runs last.
So I've literally Ernest Hancock, I can prove, is bad for my health because I have a graph where it measures my power output and my heart rate and my conditioning and my training, and then it shows like a graph of my fitness. My fitness peaked out on September 21st. I wonder what day that was. That was the Nexus Earth Conference, and then you see another big dip. So it's like all these conferences, you see big dips, and it's like, so Bitcoin and Ernie are bad for my health.
See? Maybe a health, but performance. All right, here we go.
Well, call 602-264-2800. 602-264-2800. And now, Ernest Hancock.
Hey, we're back! Yeah, Tim Picciotti said, you know, and I don't know, some communication he was doing here in his article, pro-Trump. And he's like, yeah, you know, my allergies, you write anything, everybody sees it, you know, that bee pollen. All right. The article that you wrote, a pro-Trump libertarian's assessment of the president. All right, well, give us your assessment, man, go.
I'm a little bit fired up after last night because I had another radio show that you know, this is sort of like a God Emperor Trump type radio show, and you know, they quickly devolved into them calling me effing liberals, and the show didn't get done until like 11 o'clock last night. So
how long were you
on? Wound up from that. 2 hours. Although I wasn't really, there was like 5 guests on, and it was sort of a cluster, you know what? And it was all like ravenous Trump supporters that
anything short of trust in Trump.
And actually, during the break, I went back and found some of the juicier parts, and I'm gonna send you the link. It's like 2 minutes long, where it literally is cartoonish. Like the economy has never been better. There's more companies, and there's never been coming back more. We've never done a better job of paying down the debt. Never, like, it was cartoonish level of support. And I think anything short of, you know, Jesus coming back from the dead and Donald Trump murdering him, these guys would support Trump no matter what. And so, you know, they're like, we don't need Alex Jones support, and we don't need Mike Cernovich's support, and we don't need Tucker Carlson support, and we don't need Laura Ingraham support. And I'm like, all right, guys, whatever. But, you know, some of the issues I brought up that triggered them is, you know, I talked about, you know, why are people going to go out? And I mean, in case the audience hasn't met me or first-time listeners, I was all trumped up as the skip-to-the-end version of this that, you know, I thought at least he wasn't a globalist and there was a good chance that he could do some good. However, when it comes to, you know, the debt right now, the first half of fiscal year 2018, the debt rose by the deficit was $598 billion, just the first 6 months of the fiscal year 2018, so starting in October. The rate of debt increase just 2 weeks in March alone, at the rate that it was increasing, would over an eight-year presidency, which I don't think he'll get a second term. Maybe Dr. Frank can comment on that on Thursday, but that would mean you'd be raising the debt $10 trillion over 8 years, aka doing the exact same thing Obama did. You've got the Republicans who've suspended the debt ceiling. So, I mean, just imagine if you had Hillary in there suspending the debt ceiling or, you know, racking up the amount of debt that we're racking up. You know, it's just absolutely hypocritical. And so, you know, my big thing is, you know, why are the libertarians, why are independents? Because there were a lot of Ron Paul supporters that voted for Trump, whether, you know, libertarians want to admit that or not. There were a lot that went out and voted for Trump. And so now, you know, what are we going to go hang our hats on? Like, okay, you know, vote for the Republicans because they're only going to raise our debt and do it by cutting taxes versus, you know, whatever the Democrats are going to do, more welfare. You know, are we going to bring in the Republicans to get rid of Obamacare? You know, we're going to bring in the Republicans so we can stop World War III or stop a war with Syria. And so I just see, you know, point after point after point. You know, then you got the Federal Reserve with Jerome Powell, you know, basically a clone of Janet Yellen in there when Trump had talked about, you know, how bad Janet Yellen was. But, you know, now he needs the Fed in order to, you know, keep rates low, which they're not doing. But, he needs all this because now it's his economy, and so he wants to perpetuate the system. And so my kind of whole point is, well, you know, if, let's say the Republicans are out of there in 3 years, and obviously it's a much bigger thing than Republican versus Democrat, but if the Republicans are out of there in 3 years, or let's say it's in 7 years, then what are we going to be left with? We're going to be left with, you know, a $30 trillion debt. The, you know, we still have, you know, the Federal Reserve system there, which is bad enough, and all we're doing is putting Band-Aids on these problems. And, you know, the guys last night were talking about the GDP has never been better. I'm like, well, actually, no, the GDP growth last year was 2.3%, and Obama was averaging 2.2. So, you know, how is Obama terrible? I mean, I'm just trying to be, like, no one hated Obama more than me. But, you know, I just want to be ideologically consistent where I'm coming from. And so, you know, I know I'm probably rambling at this point, but, you know, it's just, You know, if we're going to go bomb, you know, another big point these guys were bringing up last night is, you know, stop saying this is a war. You know, this is not a war. These were just missiles going into another country surgically. You know, these are surgical missiles. And so then I tried, you know, getting into, you know, the white helmets and how other previous attacks were done by you know, Al-Nusra Front and the Free Syrian Army, who were backed by Al-Qaeda and John McCain and Hillary Clinton, and now you guys are the ones advocating their foreign policy, but yeah, I'm the liberal. I mean, give me a break here. I'm like, if you guys have such an ironclad case that it was Assad doing this or it was whoever doing this, then all I'm asking is bring it to the Congress and have the Congress vote And, you know, it's, you know, the typical, you know, well, why should we have to go to Congress? Because nobody else goes to Congress. And I'm like, well, you know, you see when, you know, you guys don't go to Congress for war, and then you see, you know, the judge in the Soros case, you know, disregards the Fourth Amendment, disregards attorney-client privilege. I mean, if you guys want to pick and choose when you're going to follow the Constitution, it's going to come back to bite you in the ass another time. Like, or what if Hillary did get in? And, you know, is everything she going to do, or she could potentially do, going to now be the new precedent? Well, oh, well, Hillary did that on her server, so now everybody else can. Or, you know, Hillary had a Clinton Foundation where they used it as a big slush fund for their own personal activities and personal gain, so everybody else can. And so I see the hypocrisy. You know, it's not what I voted for. I didn't vote for Donald Trump to basically do everything that I just mentioned. And with me, you know, a lot of people are blinded right now because, yeah, the stock market's up. However, you know, we're on, you know, a temporary, you know, steroids. And it's like, you know, we're, you know, maybe with, you know, in 2009, we were, you know, a 300-pound patient who was, you know, addicted to, you know, alcohol. And now we're a 500-pound patient who's, you know, addicted to alcohol and heroin. But, you know, they're saying, see, you know, it's not dead yet. He's happier than ever. Well, you know, now we're, you know, that guy's now 200 pounds more and he's closer to dying. And just because you slipped him an ecstasy pill and he feels better right now doesn't mean everything is going great. And
Before we get into the break, I want to ask something. There was a newfangled concept that was introduced to me that I need your clarification when we come back. It was the gentleman was saying, you know, people don't understand interest rates and how this affects stuff. When you're looking at the yield here, I'm going, yield of what? The dividends, you know, the profit of the companies, the yield. What do they mean yield? You know, and what made me think of is what he said. He goes, when you have revenue stream, you know, dividends on certain stocks or different companies you buy and so on, subscribers have value. So if you're Netflix and you got subscribers, you know, or to any of these different, you know, whatever it is. So you have subscribers. I'm going, okay, how is it that they value each of these subscribers at like $15,000, $16,000? I go, that's going to take years and years for them to get that. He goes, that's not what it is. He goes, it is if you took $1 million and you put it somewhere, what would be the return on it? Well, at 1.0%, it would be like, you know, almost nothing, you know. But that revenue stream that you get equates, you know, from a subscriber, you extrapolate that, you know, how much you'd have to put in to get that kind of revenue stream. It's $1 gazillion because interest rates are low. What happens when interest rates go up? You know, then those subscribers aren't worth as much.
Excuse me, is this where I get a license to start a new business?
I wouldn't be.
You see what I mean?
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. I can, you know, save it for the
Let's talk about it. When the interest rates are now starting to shoot up, all these companies that have been evaluated based on their subscribers, well, their value is going to go down. So the values of these companies are going to take a plummet, which is going to affect their stock prices, which are going to eventually, I mean, you know, someday. And so I didn't think of it that way. It's how people with lots of money, where do they put it? Where it's going to give them the most return. Well, you know, these companies that have a revenue stream, you know, that's better than putting it in a, you know, nothing performing a third of inflation rate of whatever, you know. But now when the interest rates go up, where are they going to put? It seems like they've been squeezing Jell-O, you know, and all of a sudden, the more rubber band you get, the more pressure there is on the Jell-O leaking out. So I'd really like to have you explain that if you can.
Yeah, if you want to Google the term capital asset pricing model, or maybe just put CAPM, that might help you out a little bit. I'm trying to get my email up right now.
CAPM.
There's an Investopedia article on it.
Okay. Capital asset pricing model. What is the capital asset pricing model? Capital asset pricing model is a model that describes the relationship between systematic risk and expected return for assets, particularly stocks. Widely used throughout finance for the pricing of risky securities, generating expected returns for assets given the risk of those assets, calculating cost of capital. And then when it screws up, the government bails you out. Okay. The general idea behind CAPM is that investors need to be compensated in two ways, time value of money and risk. The time value of money is represented by the risk-free rate in the formula and compensates investors for placing money in an investment over a period of time. The risk-free rate, customarily the yield on government bonds like U.S. Treasuries. The other half, the formula calculates the amount of compensation an investor needs for taking on additional risk. Okay. This is, yeah, it kind of gets into there. All right. The risk-free rate is 2%.
It gets into the weeds, but...
Yeah, the expected market return... Basically,
what it gets into is the higher... This all has to do with what the risk-free rate is. And if the risk-free rate, you know, is 0.1 or 0, and you think the market's going to go up, let's say, 8%, well, then, you know, you're going to have a much higher, like, expected return. However, if like, now the risk-free rate is 2% and you still think the market's going to do 8, well, then now, you know, 8 minus 2 is now 6, so now you've got a much lower number going on in terms of, like, what your expected market return, expected return on your asset will be. So, you know, the higher the risk-free rate, so the higher the interest rates go up, because the risk-free rate, you know, and again, it pains me to say that the government bonds are risk-free.
Yeah, I know. That's my first thing. I'm going 30 years at nothing percent with, 30 years as a dollar. I'm like, risk-free? Is that what they're saying? Okay. All right, so we'll get into that.
And also, I just looked up real quick, because when I was on the show, it was actually the day before the market high, and you were saying, you know, grab the lifeboats, and it was a really great outro that you had. But I mentioned, you know, the worst thing you can do is to be short the volatility index. Well, since year-to-date, the short volatility index funds are down. One's down 90%, one's down 91%, one's down 82%.
Yeah, see that, you know, this big, I know it's a big deal to you, but I still don't understand it. You know, I need that understood too. So the CAPM, we'll go over that, and then we'll do this, whatever the heck it is you call that. All right, here we come.
What's the question?
You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
Okay, Tim and I are talking, you know, in the break, you know, trying to get a beat on this. This concept that I was trying to, you know, talk about before we ran out of time, it's called a capital asset pricing model. And it's where you put your money based on, you know, I got a gazillion dollars. Well, that's my robot. I got a, you know, it's making me money. Go make me money, robot. You know, my money is a robot. Or, you know, I got... you know, a ghost gunner, man, go make me lower, you know, a robot make me, I got a 3D printer, go make me, kind of, you get miners, I got, go make me, I got robots all over the place. What's going to be classified as a robot? Does that have to be a certain kind of robot? You know, they're going to tax my robots? You know, oh, I'm sorry, I said it, which means they're going to do it, okay? This is, you know, damn. Well, this capital asset pricing model is wherever... I need Tim to explain this to us so that we understand when the interest rates go up, I'm thinking because of a lot of companies are valued based on the return that they get, the money that they pay. If I get $10,000 a year from some investment, how much do I got to put in to do that? Well, at 1%, what's that? $1 million to get 10,000? $10,000 on $1 million. Well, you double the 2%, that's $20,000. So we're talking, you know, it go up pretty quick with the interest rates. Well, they're going, they got risk-free, like U.S. Treasuries for 30 years at, you know, 3%, you know, and the dollar, and that's risk-free, 30 years. I'm like, all right. So all that Chinese money that came in 30 years ago, all that Chinese money, all the retirements that people are starting to pull on the system, I mean, it's a perfect storm. So... when the interest rates go up, the value on these companies and so on that are based on their subscription models and how much money they generate, you know, through people, well, that goes down in comparison. So these companies are not worth as much. People pull their money from there. They'll go invest in some risk-free treasury or something, or municipals or whatever. And one, we got to get past, let's talk about the risk-free aspect of that. I mean, do we give it that nomenclature? Is that what we call it?
I mean, that's what they teach in school, what it's called, and that's what they, you know, the formula uses. However, I mean, the listeners of the show are smarter starting to realize that there is risk in having government bonds. The main risk is something called interest rate risk, and something I've touched on before, but when the interest rates go up, the price of the bond goes down. So in layman's terms, if you had a, let's say, a 10-year bond, and you had $1 million, and rates only go up 1%, that $1 million would now be $900,000. Rates go up 2%, now would be about $780,000
because
it's
compounding.
Now
you
still get...
Why? The interest rates go up.
Because that has to do with, like, if you're going to liquidate. Now, you'd still get your, and I'm getting back to your question, you'd still get, let's say, your 2% piddly interest. So you'd still get, let's say, your $20,000 a year. However, let's say now you can go out in the market and get a bond that's paying 4% and your bond's paying 2%. Well, who's going to want to buy your, you have to be compensated for the fact that now you can go on the market and buy one that's twice as much. And again, twice as much, you know, when you're starting, you know, at basically close to zero, it doesn't take much to, you know, have a 1 or 2% increase in the rate of interest. So you need to be compensated for the fact that now you can go out in the market and get a higher rate now than the one that you were previously holding on to if rates end up going up. So that's why, you know, no one's going to go out and buy your bond for $1 million that pays 2% if you can go out and buy one that pays 4% on the open market. So this all relates to that capital asset pricing model is what your friend, I think, was referring to, because ultimately investors, you know, need to be compensated and, you know, they need to be compensated in two ways, the time value of their money and the risk. So if you have, you know, if you get paid, you know, 1% to hold on to a treasury bond versus getting paid, you know, 5% to hold on to a treasury bond, which you're not, I mean, you're getting paid like 3%. For a 10-year, close to that right now. And so there's a formula, and so the formula has to do with the expected market return. So let's say the expected return, let's say, is 8%. I'm just throwing that out there. So 8% minus 1, you get a 7. But if you get an 8% minus, let's say, a 4, then now you get a 4. And so, I mean, so you have less return. And so the higher the quote-unquote risk-free rate is, the less you know, willingness you are to put your money at risk.
Okay, well, yeah, what you're saying is when they liquidate, if I go and liquidate and I want to sell my position on this bonds, well, it's going to be, I'm going to give you less because the return is less.
Yeah.
Okay.
Which makes complete sense. And now people are in this false assumption like, oh, well, I'm still going to get my interest. Well, you know, if the rates, you know, really jack up, I mean, yeah, you know, by the time you get your money back, you know, all the horses will already be out of the barn at that point. And it's, you know, it's too late to do anything. And nobody has really ever experienced this who is about to retire, because, you know, my entire lifetime, I mean, rates peaked out like right around, you know, the time I was born. So, they've been going down, down, down ever since. And so
I remember it's right after high school, I bought my first car. I got a $4,000 brand new 4-door little Subaru. I'm 23% interest. Now, because what are you doing? You're buying a payment. How much is that? How much can I afford? You know, you're buying a payment, just like a house. You're just buying a payment. I can afford it, you know, forever. So, and then they've gone to 6-year, 10-year, I mean, you know, 50 gazillion year, you know, loans on your cars. Well, these are starting to fold. These are starting to go. The student loans are going, the credit cards are going. I mean, everything is, and I'm wondering when they increase the interest rates on these bonds, one other thing, if nobody's buying them, they put them up and nobody buys them, and then all of a sudden it's the last minute of the Cayman Island, of the company, of the trust, of what, the Fed, and they go, oh, no, they wouldn't do that. That's wrong. They can't or something. I mean, are the Fed buying, are they buying the debt or are they not?
They're saying they're not right now, but I mean, they have all sorts of games they play with their, you know, shell companies in the Cayman Islands, which are really governments and, you know, obfuscating what they're really doing, or, you know, they do it through Ireland, you know, which, you know, how the hell is Ireland, you know, accumulating all this U.S. debt, or it's just like a big, sort of what happened was, you know, maybe it's like an under the table agreement that they have, but, you know, as soon as the Federal Reserve stops printing money, October 2014, you had the Bank of Japan massively increase their program. Then a month or two later, you had the ECB, European Central Bank, start up their program from scratch, which had never, I don't think they'd ever even done that before. And so it's sort of this, you know, hot potato game of like, okay, it's your turn. And so so what I see, you know, Donald Trump doing and what a lot of these hardcore Trump supporters don't understand is you've got this situation where the Federal Reserve is saying that they're going to sell about $1 trillion of bonds next year, while we're also going to run a $1 trillion deficit, which means the Treasury is going to have to somehow put out $2 trillion worth of bonds to the market at the same time that the Fed says they're not going to buy anything else. At the same time, we're basically giving the middle finger to China, who's been the ones who are buying our debt. And then the Japanese have been buying a lot of our debt, but I mean, they're at 200% debt to GDP ratio, and they're broker than anybody that's out there right now. And they've actually been liquidating their bonds. And so if you know that the Fed is about to start selling bonds, why would you be holding on to bonds? You would want to front run them and get out ahead of time and get a better price now if you know interest rates are going up. But all this stuff is so jacked and rigged. And, you know, I think that the main catalyst for all this stuff is interest rates going up, which is then going to cause stock market to go down, which is then going to probably cause, and oh, this is all my opinion, you know, I'm not your financial advisor unless I am your advisor listening to this. So, you know, consult your own or talk to me. But, you know, I think then at a certain point, the Federal Reserve will kick in, reverse course on their quantitative tightening program, and then they'll have to start buying bonds again. And then that will probably, you know, be the final catalyst to finally sink the dollar. Although there's a lot of other, you know, games they can play, and a lot of other, you know, tricks up their sleeves that they can always do. But, you know, that's sort of
what I think the path will be. Well, we got, cryptocurrency. You know, here it goes. Few reporting Bitcoin holdings on taxes. One of the biggest questions this tax season has been the impact of last year's cryptocurrency boom. Well, nobody's reporting. From the third letter of Captain Mark. The Crown's observation conditions us to be dishonest with ourselves. Therefore, constant surveillance produces a society of constant deception. Honest communication is the seed of civilized conduct. To deny us this seed is to deny us its fruits. But the Crown's primary objective is to stifle free thought itself, to make its subjects incapable of dissent. Seasoned pirates have always encrypted messages and codes and ciphers, so intercepted transmissions were incomprehensible. But today, the Crown possesses advanced tools of pattern recognition that document, profile, and predict our every move. Today, piracy requires hailing frequencies completely invisible to the Crown. We are tired of poltergeists in the static. Looking for a community of like-minded scoundrels? Or just want some swag to let the Crown know what you think of it? Join the conversation at piratswithoutborders.com.
Okay. Here it has, IRS treats cryptocurrency investments as property. So now it's property. Is it property now? Are we calling it property?
The IRS calls it property. The Commodity Futures Trading Commission calls it a commodity. And the SEC calls it a security.
All right. Well, we need to talk about that. Because in 15, it had, 800 and something people reported any kind of, 802 people that included cryptocurrency gains or losses in their tax filings. And I'm going, yeah, I bet a lot of those they showed losses. But I'm 802.
Which brings up a good point.
You know, 802.
There's actually a little loophole. There's a little loophole that I've sort of figured out how you can sort of game the system on this for people that did buy at like 20,000 or 15,000.
Yeah. So losses.
Normally what happens is if you buy a stock and you were to sell it at a loss, you have to wait 30 days to buy it back. But that is for a security. However, they said that Bitcoin, they being the IRS, said it is property. So technically you could buy it, you could sell it at like your $15,000 basis and then buy it back immediately and
on paper with a paper wallet.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and also I did send you some clips from that show that I was on last night. I just put this together while you were doing the whole intro thing. If you like started it around like the 55-second mark and played it for a minute, or minute and a half, you'll see what I was dealing with these guys last night. It's comical. I mean, the first minute is them just dropping F-bombs on me about how I'm a dumb effing liberal and all this other stuff.
Okay, let me see if I can pull it up.
This is a guy that I met at the Trump rally.
Oh, is that where this
comes? He's been like bothering me for about 40 days to come on a show, and then didn't realize one of his guests was an investment advisor and thought he would like get me with all these and I didn't tell him. Like, I was waiting to, like, for him to walk into that trap, and then they quickly tried switching subjects once they realized how gun they were.
I was typing on the wrong keyboard.
On FM. There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
I'm trying to pull it up. There's a show that he did. Yeah, what was it? Okay, well, I'll tell you what. I'll just do the audio, because I was going to play it in. But
that's all it is. It's only audio.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, let me go ahead and pull this up. I'll knock my coffee over. All right, let me pull this in, and we'll go ahead and see if we can get it. Here we go.
The debt is absolutely exploding, even faster than Obama. The debt, the GDP last year underneath Trump was 2.3%. It was 2.2%. The debt grew by $100 billion just 2 weeks in March alone.
What was Donald Trump's first year deficit?
Tim, you're wrong. Tim, why do you say that?
The first year deficit was Obama's budget.
Tim, you're wrong about the deficit. Was $1.6 trillion. You're telling me Donald Trump's first year deficit is more than that?
You can't compare at the height of the recession compare 2009.
Come on, Tim. Come on.
You can't compare 2009 to 2018.
2010, Obama's deficit in the second year was, I believe, $1.4 trillion.
Yeah, Trump, we have higher tax revenues now, and we're on our way to a $1.2 trillion deficit this year.
Okay, wait.
No, we're not.
Who is
the economy is more powerful than ever before? We've never seen the economy this good. I mean, everything amazing is happening. There's not one bad thing happening in this economy. Companies keep growing, coming back, building new factories. I mean, this is visible. It's in front of our eyes, and if that's the truth, I mean, I don't know how much more to say it.
I just want to ask him one more quick question. I'm sorry, man.
You just got off. Hold on. I have 2 minutes. Okay. Hold on.
All right. That's probably like the junk. I think that's about the crux of it. Yeah.
So it was 2 hours of Trump worship.
Yeah, I mean, it was. I sort of like just wanted to have that be like a Peter Schiff is right type moment. Like, man, I can't believe you guys here at like the peak of all this stuff going down are saying. So I wasn't on the full 2 hours, and they had some other investment guy on. It was all like Muslim bashing. I mean, it was about as far right wing, Trump worship as you could possibly imagine. There was other clips that were even more outlandish than that, but I didn't have the time to go back.
Well, how
and find
did they
it.
Even know that they
myself.
Wanted you on? Because they thought you were the Trump guy.
Well, because I met one of the guys at the Trump rally, and then he started this blog and this radio show, and he keeps wanting to get me on, and I think they have Sheriff Joe on today, and they had him on. They had Sheriff Joe on last week, and they just get on all these guys. They just basically circle jerk each other, and talk about how great everything is. The entire time, and so they've mentioned the economy and how everything is great. I mean, there's other clips that, again, I didn't have the time because I was on late last night, and then you guys kind of woke me up and had to get the kids out. But anyways, there was other parts where they're saying, Trump is invincible. He's like the toughest mother effer around. Nobody's scared of him, or everybody's scared of him. Everybody worships at his knees. I mean, this is like so over the top la la land. I'm like, the only reason he did this airstrike is because, you know, they've got dirt. He wanted to appease the neocons. And they're like, how dare you call him a neocon? I'm like, no, I said he wanted to appease the neocons. They're like, he's done nothing to appease them. I'm like, well, you know, he did pardon Scuba Libby the other day. And I'm like, it's very obvious that he wants to prove that he's not a Russian agent. So he gets to now bomb, you know, spend $200 million bombing, you know, these factories out there to prove that he's not a Russian agent, but he could have 50 hydrogen bombs go off and they'd still call him a Russian agent. So stop trying to, you know, negotiate with terrorists. And by terrorists, I mean the deep state. I mean the government. You're turning your back on so many different things. And if you guys think that you can win without any libertarian support, without any independent support, without any constitutionalist support, go right ahead. It's people like, and I didn't get a chance to really get into this, but, you know, I've made other podcasts recently. One was called Being Consistent, where, you know, it's the people that are willing to let Trump deviate from what he said he was going to do, who I think are the ones who are going to usher in, you know, liberal presidency in 2020. And then you'll be proud of me for this. You're like, well, what are you going to do? Are you going to let some Democrat get in? What if tomorrow's election was tomorrow? Who are you going to vote for? I'm like, well, you know, unless Adam Kokesh gets a libertarian presidency, I might not even vote. And they're like, what? You're not even going to vote? You're gonna let the Democrats win?
Yeah, what's the difference?
And I'm like, well, you know, what am I going to vote for? I'm like, I just rattled off all these things that I didn't want Hillary to do, and now Trump is doing them. So, you know, why am I going to waste my time? You know, I'm looking into blockchain, looking into ways to protect people. And I didn't really get, I mean, there was like four or five guests on at the same time, all basically bashing me. And, you know, bring on 20 of them, you know, for all I care, you know, take them all on. But, you know, I told them I would do it. So, yeah, so
how did you know him? How did
back.
they get to you? What was the impetus for them?
He was the guy I was next to him at the Trump rally for like 12 hours. You know, that the day down in September when I went to cover the Trump rally, and it was like 110 degrees outside. And, it was a Trump rally like right before.
No, I remember you're up in the front, you know, jeering, you know,
yeah,
going
and
after.
He was next to me, and I was.
After Trent Franks, and then Trump's there, yep. And you're holding the sign and jailer and lock her up, and you're being one of the. They go, woohoo, Tim's. We want him on the show. He's one of us. And then you went in and you went all principled and stuff, and damn it, we got him. But it made for an interesting show. Did they want to get rid of you? They were just trying to beat you down? I mean, what was their goal for keeping you on?
I don't really know. But they had this other investment. Yeah, and right before that, I mean, I told you not to play because there were some F-bombs in there where they were calling me a dumb effing liberal and all this other stuff. And so I'm like, wait a minute, so I want to cut government spending, and so I'm effing liberal. Like, I don't want my great-great-grandchildren to be debt slaves, so I'm a effing liberal. You know,
what
this
mean,
is
great-great-grandchildren.
You know, I'm like, actually, everything you guys are espousing right now is, you know, everything that Hillary wanted to do and is the Democratic Party playbook by increasing the debt. And they're like, everything is perfect. I mean, you guys heard it. I mean,
yeah,
but, so it's this
not.
Attitude.
All right, before we run out of time, I want to get this in because it's tax time. All right, we have the IRS says it's property. Is it property? What else is government agencies calling it for Bitcoin?
The Commodity Futures Trading Commission calls it a commodity. The SEC calls it a security, and the IRS calls it property. So however they can screw you the most is what they're going to classify it as.
I mean, is it change all the time, or is it depending on? I mean, are they just what? I mean, are they going to have to go?
Everybody wants jurisdiction over it, so you know, so that way they can increase their budgets and do whatever. So the CFTC, by having Bitcoin futures, you know, if it wasn't a commodity, I don't think it could be on the futures market. And you know, it's just, you know, probably an excuse to be able to increase their budgets and raise more revenue. And so just like we saw with Morpheus, you know, however they need to apply it to screw that whatever individual they happen to have in front of them, then that's how they're going to use.
Okay, so what is it? One thing you said, you had a way for them to, if they bought it at $15,000, $20,000, they could, you know, come out ahead on this. What were you talking about?
Well, normally there's a concept, and again, I'm not a tax advisor. I'm not a CPA. I hate doing taxes. I have my own CPA, so you know, go consult your own CPA for this. But anyways, there is a concept known as a wash sale, where if you were to sell let's say, a stock at a big loss, and you wanted to buy that stock back, you'd have to wait 30 days or else that loss doesn't count anymore, because the loss really only happened on paper. Now, that is a rule with securities. Now, that rule, I don't think, applies to property. And so since the IRS says that Bitcoin is property, technically, I think what that means is, again, I'm not a tax accountant, so what this means is, let's say you bought Bitcoin at $15,000, $16,000, $17,000, that you could sell that, book the loss for a future gain down the road, and then buy it back immediately. Because now, I would be pretty sure, as you know what, that they'll probably end up changing that rule down the road. But as it stands right now, to my knowledge, that there is no guidance on that. So they've sort of screwed themselves by labeling it as property, I don't know how many people are sophisticated enough to understand that. And that was just something that happened.
So I take it what I bought at 20. It's now whatever it is, 8,000 or something. I sell it. I take that loss, and then I just buy it back.
Yeah, and then when you do have a gain, then you use that $12,000 loss to offset your future gain.
What? It's over on so many. They're just going to go because we don't like it. It's like when the Facebook guy, that was from Brazil and had a U.S. passport. He gave up his U.S. passport and citizenship or whatever.
Yep.
And just saved like 60-something million dollars on a sell-off on Facebook. But you go, that wasn't fair. You jilted us legally, and that's not allowed, or we don't like it, or so. I mean, we'll get you somewhere else. They're a gang with a flag. I mean, that's all. They're all gangs with flag. You look at the colored maps, different countries, it's just gang colors.
Is spreading the message of liberty.
Gang colors. Gangs. Damn it.
Gang.
That's one thing that, that's one thing Alex Jones, man. Whenever I was on, or we were talking at different events, we'd meet or something, and I'd do the gangs. It was just a gang with a flag, man. He'd dig that. He'd have me on just to say that. So I'm.
He was going nuts over Trump. I showed you some of those.
Yeah.
36-hour broadcast.
He was like.
The larger clip is even better.
He dumped on him. Well, Laura Ingraham, I heard. They all dumped. They did. Well, that's like the group that you were talking to, the radio show. They're going, we don't need them. Then Tim comes on and says, oh, yeah, I think you do.
There's a lot of people who didn't vote for Hillary who didn't vote at all because the media said she had a 98% chance of winning. So if you're, some college kid smoking weed in your dorm room and partying and you're like, why am I going to win? She has a 98% chance of winning. I'm not going to go vote. But now this time you're going to feel the full wrath of, every single person that I guarantee there's tons of people out there protesting Trump who didn't even go out and vote. So this time, the whole voting thing, and I'm just trying to make the case that it's not going to be a cakewalk. And Trump, there's states where he only won it by 5,000 votes here, 50,000 votes there. I mean, it took a miracle for him to pull off what he pulled off. And I think the GOP has completely squandered their being in control of all the houses, and now they've outed themselves as being the rats, neocons that they really are.
Okay, so, now check this out. At Texas A&M, United We Stand, which Christina Tobin's thing, Free and Equal presents, United, blah, blah, blah. Texas A&M, co-sponsors of $5 billion freaking whatever, they put a bunch of logos on. And this is April 29th. Yeah, April 29th. I'm going to go that weekend. Davi's still going to be here. It's right before we go to Libertopia. But, they're, paying my way and everything. So I'm like, okay, so I'll go for a day and a half or something. But it has Colin Cantrell's going to be speaking. Colin Pape, which is a founder of Presearch, kind of the Google blockchain.
Oh, yeah, I met him up there, yeah.
Yeah, so then Jeff Berwick and Ron Paul is going to be speaking because it's down by him and so on. So I'm going to go, and it's all about, and I told Christina, I go, I come. I don't count on me doing this vote thing. I don't know what you're thinking is going to happen, but I'm just like, and she goes, no, you've been a supporter of and kind of whatever. So I'll get up, I'll do all pirate, and I'm going, there has to be the option of not voting, because they come in, they'll say, well, you have to vote, even though it's all jacked up and, you know, you get Trump and you get the same thing, whatever. You have to. Why? You know, can I, you know, vote by not voting? That's my vote. Kiss my ass. You know, I'm going pirate. You know what I'm going to do? The amount of gas, effort, and time devoted to that, I'm going to work on a square foot garden. I'm going to get me some solar. I'm going to something, because I'm, you know, at the next hour we have John Brakey is coming on, electionnightmares.com. Now, he's been...
Yep, I know. I'm familiar with him.
Yeah, he's trying to, you know, get it done right. Well, he'll be talking about blockchain voting, too. Now, when Christina Tobin called me, they had just done a thing in L.A., and it was 10,000 people showed up. They had a big, you know, to-do. All right. Well, she wanted to go to Nexus Earth. She needed to, for whatever reason, she wanted to go and see these people and talk, and it was a good networking thing, and there's some crypto guys and talking about... She goes, I want to... I go, well, it's not really a voting thing. I mean, they don't care. And she goes, well, I what can I do? Who do I need to talk? I said, I tell you what. You call this guy, and you tell him you're interested in blockchain voting, boom, you're on.
So I talked to her at an Acapulco, and she said that basically two of her favorite people in the world were you and Colin Cantrell. And she basically credits you with helping launch all this stuff. So she
I've been supportive. I tell you the reason I was supportive of all her efforts. Now, she did a presidential debate for, you know, other parties or something with Larry King. Larry King was the co-host that gave it some credibility and so on. The libertarians have been screwing her. The Greens screwed her. Everybody's screwing her. And it's at the universities, you know, in California. Well, Janet Napolitano was in charge. What do you think was going to happen? So they're in a lawsuit with UCLA right now, you know, for whatever they did. And which is good that they do that. So Texas A&M won't screw them. But this is, yes, you need to do this. You need to focus on solution. That's why you have John Brakey on. That's why I go, look, voting needs to get its due, man. It needs to get, can we do it? Well, what's the other rubber meets the road? It's juries. You know, juries and accurate voting. But when it doesn't work, when we try, we really, 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 really tried. When we really made the effort, and you expose them for those won't leave us alone for what they are, then what? It's pirate. You decentralize of everything. And I'm only going to get, you know, 10, 15 minutes. All the speakers are just, you know, boom, 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 boom. It's a music thing. You know, it's in between, you get, you know, while they're changing or between songs or something, you'll get up and do your spiel. But I'm going, you know, my thing, I do the pirate. You cannot be independent if you're dependent and, you know, and decentralization of everything and blah, 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 blah. I know how that's going to go over. They're going, yeah, what he said. And even if they don't like it, you know, it's going to be just like you doing the Peter Schiff moment on that show. Look, let me tell you what's going to happen. And when it happens, they'll remember you. You won't get any credit, but you know, but it's a splinter in their mind. I want to take this freaking wooden stake and a mallet and stuff it into the top of their cranium and say, yeah, ignore that, you know? So I could, that's why I wanted to go do it. I really didn't have a lot of time or money to do it, but they hooked me up. So I'm going to go ahead and go there and pass out all my pirate crap, and Davi's going to be here. We can get some stuff ready for that, and then maybe a little bit more for Libertopia. I got a lot of festivals coming up and so on.
How's Libertopia? I just Googled that yesterday. It seemed like it was a pretty good lineup, like same.
Libertopia, you know, waxes and wanes, but it's going back to Humphrey's Half Moon, which is on the marina there in San Diego across from the naval base there. Or Marine base or whatever it is.
Okay.
And so you see some Harriers dropping in every now and then. But the it's like a lot of these. It's like a Narcopoco. It's a lot like a Narcopoco, but it's the people. These festivals is more than I get to go speak. I get to, you know, say my spiel. But and I like doing that because then I don't have to tell 500 people, you know, the same thing over and over and over. I just go watch my thing. But you do that, and what happens is, you know, it's the networking. So Libertopia be a good one for you because it's close. Hey, I got to get to my next guest, man. Thanks for short notice coming on. It was good.
No problem.
All right, peace.
All right, later, man.